Last week, Dwight talked about Abraham and Isaac, about human sacrifice as an accepted practice in the water in which they swam, and about Abraham's connection to a deeper truth underneath. Abraham and Isaac lived in a world ruled, according to popular telling, by a panoply of fickle and capricious little gods that demanded sacrifice. According to the story of the day, the story everyone knew, there was no better, no more efficacious sacrifice than the child whom you loved. But what Abraham knew and what Isaac learned was that the God that Abraham served was different. The God of Abraham was a God of covenant, a God of promise, one who would safeguard and bring about God's promises, not because of the worthiness of the recipient, but because of the trustworthiness of the giver. Abraham knew that Isaac would be given back to him. God had made a promise. And sure enough, God provided an alternative sacrifice, a ram that was caught in the blackberries. You thought they were bad in your garden. The question that occurred to me after last week's sermon, the thing that stayed with me, was wondering, how do I cultivate in myself a connection to that deeper reality that Abraham knew? How do I ensure that when these two views of reality rub up against each other, when I have to make a choice between a cultural norm and the invitation of God, how can I be relied upon to follow Abraham's example, trusting to the God of promise? Today's first reading consists of selections from Genesis chapter 24. And in that chapter, we find the story of two men who saw reality from two very different perspectives. One was utterly at the mercy of the cultural waters in which he swam. The other knew the God of promise. And so the ways that these two men interpreted reality, the stories they told about what was going on, corresponded to the realities that each one could see. The first man I want to talk about is Laban. Now, Laban was a trickster without a conscience. The stories that Laban told himself hovered around the ideas of every man for himself, looking out for number one, and getting while the getting was good. And so when Rebekah came home wearing this jewelry that Abraham's servant had given her, Laban saw that jewelry and he hurried out to greet the giver of such gifts. Laban brought that servant into his home, and we are told that Laban himself helped unload that servant's camels and all the gifts they bore. Laban promised his sister in marriage in return for the customary wedding gifts, and only when that servant prepared to leave the next morning did Laban decide, maybe we should ask Rebekah about this. But Laban was only stalling for time. If only he could keep that servant there longer, surely there would be more gifts. Unhappily for Laban, Rebekah consented immediately to the marriage, and the caravan set out on its return trip. So if Laban was ready to trade his own sister for some of the gifts carried on Abraham's camels, that makes me wonder about the things that I can become fixated upon. For what might I be willing to trade my sister, Tori? Or sacrifice my son, Eli? or damage some other important relationship. The gifts that Laban sought could represent all kinds of things in our lives. They could represent riches, or identity, or influence. They could represent our commitment to a particular kind of politics, or perhaps our desperation for a particular kind of stability. A house, a car, a promotion, these are often the things for which relationships are sacrificed. Stories of need and want and scarcity can lead us to make choices that are culturally appropriate, but relationally damaging, no matter what our actual circumstances. But there is a second point of view in today's narrative, and that's the viewpoint of Abraham's servant, Eliezer. Now, Eliezer could have told a story about how he had been Abraham's heir until that unlikely son born to Sarah in her 100th year. Eliezer could have told the story of his arduous and dangerous journey, how he had assembled a caravan of 10 camels and brought them across great distances and defended the gifts that they carried from thieves and bandits along the way, only to fall into the clutches of a treacherous Laban. Eliezer would have standing to make a complaint or two. Instead, Eliezer chose not to tell stories about his own hardships, his own faithfulness, his own perseverance and sacrifice. And instead, Eliezer chose to tell the story of the God of promise, who had been introduced to him by Abraham. Eliezer told Laban how Abraham was not just rich, but blessed by God. The key to Abraham's success was not that he was a hard worker, or a mighty warrior, or uncommonly lucky. Abraham had a relationship with the God of promise, and that God cared for Abraham. Similarly, Eliezer told about his own experience of the God of promise, how God answered Eliezer's own cry for help that very day, outside of town at the well. Eliezer had inherited not Abraham's wealth, but something better. Eliezer inherited Abraham's connection to the living God of promise. And that's the story that we hear Eliezer telling in today's reading. Eliezer's eyes were opened and he saw God at work in the world. Eliezer knew that he had not encountered Rebekah by coincidence. He didn't arrive at the well at just the right time simply by his own intelligence or his hard work or his effort. Eliezer, like Abraham before him, experienced firsthand the blessing of God and success in the endeavor to which God had called him. There are some hard things going on in our world and in our individual lives. Few of us remain untouched by sadness or tragedy for very long. Child sacrifice, the sacrifice of all kinds of relationships, is still an epidemic in our world, even if we're a little more subtle about it than Abraham was. But in the midst of everything, the God of Abraham, the God of promise, continues to call out to us. God invites us to find meaning and purpose, both in the good things of life and in the difficult ones. This is what the church is all about. As church, we gather to tell our stories and to consider how even an ancient story, like that of Rebekah and Eliezer and Laban, might have something to say for us today. In church, we learn and practice the telling of stories of the God of promise. How that God has removed scarcity from our lives, not necessarily by showering us with everything we desire, but by teaching us how to love one another and how to rest in God's sure promises. Like Abraham and Sarah and Isaac, we may swim in the same basic water as everyone around us. But as Christians, we believe, like Abraham and Isaac, the deeper reality of God's goodness can shine through every circumstance and be known as the deeper truth of our lives. It is that truth that enables us to tell a different story. The stories we tell reflect our connection to that which is deepest within us. Do we tell stories like Laban did about scarcity and domination and taking advantage of others? Or do we tell stories like Eliezer did about the God of promise, whose yoke is easy, knowing that the kingdom of God is a perfectly safe place to be? It's not the circumstances that are determinative of the experience of a life. Rather, it is the stories that we tell about them.